we're beginning a series of preachings looking at the book of Exodus. And we're starting with quite a famous passage where Moses is called by God at the burning bush. So I'm just going to read that. It's from Exodus chapter 3 and it's verses 1 to 15. Now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian. And he led the flock to the far side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames of fire from a bush. Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up. So Moses thought, I will go over and see this strange sight, why the bush does not burn up. When the Lord saw that he had gone over to look, God called to him from within the bush, Moses, Moses. And Moses said, Here I am. Do not come any closer, God said. Take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy ground. Then he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. At this Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look at God. The Lord said, I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I have heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and I am concerned about their suffering. So I have come down to rescue them from the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up out of that land into a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey, the home of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites. And now the cry of the Israelites has reached me, and I have seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them. So now, go. I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? And God said, I will be with you, and this will be the sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God on this mountain. Moses said to God, Suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, The God of your fathers has sent me to you, and they ask me, What is his name? Then what shall I tell them? God said to Moses, I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me to you. God also said to Moses, Say to the Israelites, The Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob has sent me to you. This is my name forever, the name you shall call me from generation to generation. I don't know whether any of you here have ever been curious people. You know, people who see something a little bit odd and think, oh, I'll just go and investigate. I have to say, I've never been one of those people myself. Not something that I would enjoy doing, but I grew up with a sister who was very curious. And it often led to one form of disaster or another. I remember on one occasion when my sister was 5 and I was 3, and I was looking up to her because she was, you know, my sister, and she did wonderful things. She decided, in one of our dance classes, I used to go to dance class, but that's another thing, that she was going to investigate something. She wasn't going to dance, but instead she was going to look at the hot water pipes, which ran along the side of the dance school. Because my sister figured that the gap between the hot water pipe and the wall was big enough for her to crawl behind. So she thought, I will investigate this space. And she put one arm through, and she put the other arm through, and she tried to get her head and shoulders through, but to no avail. And I distinctly remember turning around and finding my sister stuck behind the hot water pipe by one arm. To which we had to wait until the dance class was over and the caretaker could come and release my sister from the pipes. 2 years later, you thought she might have learnt, she decided she was going to investigate the freezers at the supermarket. I was now 5 and still adored my sister and thought, what a wonderful woman. I thought woman, she was 7, but you know, she was. So she put both hands into the freezer and convinced her friend to do the same and started to climb in. But then realised actually this wasn't a good idea because it was quite cold. At which point, she realised she was stuck, frozen by the hands onto the freezer. I distinctly remember my mother's face as we called the manager and he had to switch the freezers off to get my sister's hands out. Looking back, I guess it's no real surprise that I grew up to be a little wary of curiosity and where it might lead. And this was compounded as a teenager when I started to watch Hollywood movies. Because, you see, I discovered when watching a Hollywood movie that curiosity is not a good thing there either. If you hear a sound in the darkness or a funny thing in the distance, you do not go and investigate. Because in most cases, it leads to almost certain death, I discovered. So these two things compounded. When I look at the story of Moses and the burning bush, I get a little bit scared. It's one of those stories which makes me feel a bit hot and cold. You know, the old sense of panic comes and I begin to think something bad is going to happen to Moses here. Because you see, at the beginning of this passage, Moses is living a really good life. Things are going really well for him. I mean, he's living in the land of Midian, which was not a bad land to live in. He's married to a lady called Zipporah. He's got a son called Gershom. He's got a good job as a shepherd for his father-in-law, who's a fairly rich man by all accounts. And he's living in a loving community, which he's been accepted into and been for a while. He has all the things that you need to live a good life, to live a secure life, to live a happy life. And the amazing thing is that this good, secure life that we find him in, as we look at chapter 3 today, is a far cry from the life that he led before. You know, it's a far cry from the life that Moses had at the beginning of chapter 2 in this book. The one where he lived in Egypt, where he was under the care and rule of Pharaoh. The one where Moses was born as a Hebrew. Born into persecution, hidden in the reeds as a young child so that he wouldn't get killed, saved from death by the daughter of Pharaoh, adopted into Pharaoh's family and brought up as an Egyptian himself. Chapter 3, which we start at today, is a far cry from his life at the beginning of chapter 2, which found Moses torn between worshipping God and worshipping Pharaoh in the land that he lived, a life which eventually led to him murdering an Egyptian, being betrayed by his fellow Hebrews and fleeing the wrath of his adopted family. And I guess it's no surprise, really, that Moses' life in chapter 3 is now so different, because, after all, he's been in Midian for 40 years when we encounter him today. He's been living as a shepherd. He's been tending flock. He's been watching sheep. He's been protecting lambs. For 40 years, he's led a life that is far away from the intrigue, the lies, the murder, the life of Egypt. 40 years of living the good life. 40 years of living the life of an uncurious shepherd in the wilderness. And then, as we enter our passage today, as Moses is tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, as he's going about his everyday business, things take a bit of a change. Moses spots something unusual, a bush that is on fire but does not burn up. And he does something which he hasn't done for a long, long time. Moses becomes curious. Curious about this bush. Curious about this fire. Curious about this weird phenomenon that has appeared. So curious, in fact, that he decides to go and investigate. And as he goes to investigate, he finds something very unexpected. He comes face to face with someone he never expected to meet in Midian. He comes face to face with God. The God of his father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, the God of the Hebrews. As Moses goes to investigate the bush that is on fire but does not burn up, he finds he comes face to face with the God that he left behind 40 years before. And so it's no surprise, I guess, that as Moses takes off his sandals and realizes who it is that he has encountered, he's a little bit afraid. Because, you know, here is God, the God of his people, the God he'd forgotten about, the God he hoped he would never see. here is God. And Moses is standing there and he's looking right at him in the middle of this bush. And he's afraid because no one looks at God and lives. Every Hebrew knows that. No one looks at God and lives, let alone a murderer who ran away, let alone a man who turned his back on his own God, let alone an Israelite who has chosen to live his life among Midianite people. No one looks at God and lives. And so Moses bows down before God and he covers his face, expecting God to strike him down, expecting God to end his life, expecting that his curiosity that day has led to almost certain death. But, you know, God doesn't seem to want to go there, really. He has other things on his mind. And as Moses bows in fear with his hands before his face, God starts to talk. He starts to talk about something else. He starts to talk about the plight of his people, the Israelites, those who are still in Egypt, those who are still slaves, those who are still suffering, those who have been crying out to God to intervene in their lives. And as Moses listens to God, he realizes that God has not come to punish him. God has not appeared to dredge up the past and to call him to account. God has not come to this land to wipe Moses off the face of the earth. Rather, God has come to use him. He says, so go now. I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. Now, I'm no expert, but in my experience, in a situation like this, you know, when God has appeared to someone in a burning bush and he's asked them to do something for him, like rescue a whole nation, there are really only two options. The first option is that you run as fast as you can and find a hiding place. Hope that God won't catch you. But I've heard that in the Bible that doesn't go very well, because God often catches up with you and you end up doing what he wants anyway. Or, and the better option, you do what he says. You obey him. As quickly as you can. That's the best option. That's the option that most people would take when they encounter God in a burning bush and he asks them to do something. However, here in Exodus, Moses does neither. Whether out of elation that he's not been killed or excitement at the plan that God's got for him, Moses neither runs or obeys. Instead, he does something very strange. Instead, he enters into an argument. He enters into a long argument with God about why God has come and called him. Now, I don't know about you, but I find that a little bit unusual. Because, you know, I'd like to think of myself as a normal human being who's generally fairly confident when around people and can have a discussion and hold their own. But there are times and there are people that you meet that makes this impossible. It reminds me really of a time where I met someone who I really admire. David Beckham. Now hold on. He's a good footballer. Did you not see the match yesterday? Yes. When were all the goals scored? Mainly when he was on the pitch. Anyway, that's by the by. David Beckham. Simon and I found out one day that David Beckham was going to be in London at Borders Bookshop signing his new book. This was quite a few years ago, the book with all the pictures in. So I was only interested in the words, of course. So, having got the book already, we decided we'd go up. And why not? We might meet David. So we got up into town and we saw a little bit of a queue out of the door of Borders. We thought, well, we'll queue. It'll only take half an hour maybe. So we were there. We had a few sandwiches. Took an hour, maybe an hour and a half, maybe two. And we got to the door. And as we got to the door, the lady at the door said, oh, no, sorry, no more people allowed in. David's got to go. And we were like, oh. And Simon and some of our friends were like, oh, come on, Kate, let's just go, you know. And I'm like, no. I'm like, just let's wait a minute. So we waited for a little while and everyone behind us disappeared and the girls in front of us were having an argument saying, please let us in. And eventually the lady went, oh, go on, just you lot. And I'm like, see, come on. And we get into the store and I imagine David will be there. Little did I know, there's 5 floors. He's on the 5th floor and the queue snakes around the whole of each floor. So what, 3 hours later maybe, we're eventually coming up to the floor that David is on. And I'm thinking, oh, what will I say to him? Oh, and I'm rehearsing all these things in my mind. And then we come up the escalator and he's there. And I go to jelly. Everything goes a bit weird. And I'm acting natural, you know, oh, look, there he is. Yeah, you know, but inside I'm like, oh my goodness, it's David. He's actually here. And I'm walking up and I see everyone just putting their book down. He signs it and he's chatting to his friends and they're walking off. I'm thinking, well, I've got to say something to him. I've got to speak to him. So I put my book down and casually come out with the best thing I can. Hello, how are you? He says, I'm fine. How are you? Yeah, I'm fine, thanks. Then he says, have you been waiting all this time? I said, yes. There you go, thank you. And I walk off. And I imagine I'm like one of those, you know, teenagers, like stumbling over their feet, very excited. But I thought I was cool. Son will tell you afterwards whether I was or not. But the thing is, when I came face to face with my, I'd use the word idol, but that's probably wrong in church, but the person that I really admire, I went to jelly. And I couldn't really do anything except try and stand up. And you know, here in the Bible, Moses has come face to face with God. Not David Beckham, but God. And God asks him to do something. And Moses decides this was the time to question God's judgment. I mean, look, in the Bible, God appears to Moses and Moses says, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? Who am I? And God says, well, I will be with you. And so Moses says, well, who are you? If they ask me what is his name, then what shall I tell them? Who are you? Moses stands there and he argues with God and he questions God. And it goes on, not just in this passage, but through the whole chapter. I mean, this is hardly the normal procedure, is it? When you come face to face with the God of Israel, the Lord, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac and the God of Jacob. This is hardly how you're supposed to act when faced with God. You don't stand there and enter into a long argument with him. Or do you? Or do you? I mean, actually thinking about it, when we look at other encounters, isn't this quite familiar, the way that Moses is acting? I mean, was it not Abraham who questioned God's judgment on the fate of the city of Sodom and argued the cause? Was it not Jacob who spent a whole night wrestling with God? Was it not Gideon who asked God to prove himself with a sign? Was it not Elijah who questioned God's call on his life and asked to die because it was all going so wrong? Was it not Job who for a whole book demanded to speak to God again and again and again and again? Was it not the disciples who always questioned what Jesus did? Was it not Jesus who battled with God in the Garden of Gethsemane to the point of sweating blood before he died? You see, in the Bible, when people encounter God, is it not actually normal that they stand there and interact with him and push the boundaries with him? I mean, here in the book of Exodus, Moses doesn't just ask those 2 questions. He goes on to grapple with God until the Lord's anger burned against him. Moses really tries it on. You know, he really goes for it. He really questions. He really battles. He really pushes it. He really engages completely with God. And what is so amazing in this passage is that God engages completely with Moses as well. He doesn't just give Moses pat answers. He doesn't just command him to go. He doesn't just expect him to do what he says without question. No, God actually interacts properly with Moses in this passage. He interacts with how Moses feels about what he's been asked to do. He interacts with what Moses is struggling with. He interacts with where Moses would like to go and who Moses would like to go with. He engages completely, 100%, with the shepherd who turned his back on him 40 years before, until God and Moses are really grappling together, struggling together, arguing together, discussing together, working things out together, to the point that Moses finds that he's no longer bowing on the ground before God, cowering in fear, waiting for God to do something to him, but he's actually standing up before God, fully engaged with God, and ready to go wherever God wants him to go. Do you know, it sort of reminds me in a funny, weird kind of way about those, I don't know whether you ever remember those pictures called magic eye pictures. When was it? 90s? Late 80s, 90s or something like that. And there were those pictures that had all those kind of funny shapes, and apparently there was a magic picture in the shapes. Does anyone remember those? Oh, good. And, you know, they were very annoying pictures. Sorry if you really love them. But they were very annoying because you'd go past them when they first started and there'd be all these shapes and you'd see a few people, like, looking at them. And so you'd glance at them and they'd go, oh, there's a picture in there, a 3D picture, and you'd be like, oh, yeah, I can't see it. And you'd carry on. But then it became a kind of craze. So every time you passed one, you were like, right, I've got to see this picture. And you'd look at it and you'd think, no, I can't. And someone would go, well, you've got to stare past it. So you'd be going. And you'd be there for hours. And sometimes you'd catch a glimpse of this 3D picture and you'd go, wow, that's amazing. And then you'd look again and you'd go, oh, I can't see it. And it would take forever until eventually everyone was hooked on these pictures. And you couldn't walk past one of these pictures without having to have a quick look, which turned into an hour or two. And some people bought these pictures so they could have them in their room and they could sit there the whole time. I'm going to see it. I'm going to see it. And they were so annoying, but you ended up just engaging with them completely for hours because you wanted to see what was beyond all of this. And you know, this is what Moses ends up doing at the burning bush. Being engaged with God completely until it took him over. And you know, I think that this is what we need to end up doing today as well, as a people of God. Because you know, the thing is today, just like in Moses' day, we have a God who cares. The same God who was then is now. We have a God who comes to us because he hears the cry of those who are suffering. We have a God who hears the cry of those who are in pain. We have a God who hears the cry of those who need help. We have a God who hears the cries of those who are slaves today. And today, just like in Moses' day, we have a God who calls us, his people, to do something about this pain. To do something about this suffering, to do something about the cries that he hears. Whether we expect him to call us or not, this is what he does. He calls us to do something. And today, as Christian people, I think the thing that we really need to do more than anything else is to engage with God. Engage with the call that he's giving us. You know, not just be a people who long to learn about God. Not just be a people who long to come on a Sunday and worship him. Not just be a people who long to live good lives. But to be a people who really long to engage with God. Just as Moses engaged with God. You know, to question God. To discuss with God. To argue with God. To shout at God. To be real with God. To tussle with God. To say to God, well, God, why have you called me? I can't do this. Who am I? Look at my faults. Please help me with my faults. Well, God, who are you? How can you be God today with all the problems going on? I don't understand it. God, help me to know. How do I make you known where I am? How do I make you known in the things that I do? Help me to understand. Really grappling and tussling with God. Because you see, I don't think today that we can any longer be a people who know the truth, who worship God, and who stand and shake our heads at the world and go, "Lord, what's happening?" That's not good enough, I don't think. We need to be a people who really grapple with God to the point that we are raw. You know, to the point that we don't simply bow down to God on a Sunday and expect Him to go and do something. But to the point that we stand up before God, fully involved, fully engaged, fully involved with what He wants, ready to go wherever He sends us to go, ready to do whatever He wants us to do. You know, the thing is that I believe this has always been the character of the people of God, that they stand before their God and they work things out with Him to a point that they're ready to do anything for Him. And I believe that today, as His people, that's what we need to be like as well. We need to really grapple with God until we're ready to do whatever it is He asks us to do. Let's pray together this morning.